Wilkers of Campbell, Catherine Quinlan Adelphio, Assistant Attorney General Appellate Counsel, Robert C. Goode, the third Appellate Counsel.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, Catherine Quinlan Adelphio on behalf of the Commonwealth. The Circuit Court of Amherst County decision should be affirmed, and the Court of Appeals of Virginia's decision should be reversed in this case for 3 reasons. Even if the search warrant that was issued in this case was deficient, probable cause and exigent circumstances existed at the time of the search to support a warrantless search. Second, in any event, even if Code Section 19.2-54 is applied in this case, it does not require suppression. And third, suppression was not warranted in this case because the law enforcement officers who conducted the search were acting in good faith, and the good faith exception applies herein. The Court of Appeals erred here because Code Section 19.2-54 only invalidates a search made under the warrant. By its plain language, the code section does not preclude the admission of evidence.
Which one of your assignments of error engages the concept of good faith?
Your Honor, I would suggest the third assignment of error addresses good faith.
I don't see it. I see exigent circumstances in your assignments of error. I don't see good faith.
Your Honor, I agree that the assignment of error does not explicitly use the word good faith, but I suggest that it does say that they relied on a warrant that was issued pursuant to
the All right,
position.
Go ahead with your argument.
By its plain language, Code Section 19.2-54 does not preclude the admission of evidence recovered during a reasonable warrantless search. In this case, the officers observed sufficient circumstances to support this warrantless search, and the defendant has never challenged that the trial court's determination that probable cause existed The defendant has never challenged that determination. With respect to the exigent circumstances, the trial courts correctly found that there were real-time communications between the confidential informant and the law enforcement officers. The law enforcement officers who were at the scene heard voices and observed individuals in the shed where the methamphetamine was being...
There's no question that the manufacture of methamphetamine is very dangerous to those who engage in it and to those nearby. I mean, the difficulty with this is that they had substantial advance notice. So, I mean, the typical exigent circumstances situation is, you know, the officer on the beat hears a scream or something, or there's something that's just immediate, and there isn't time to go to the magistrate and so on. Well, here there was time. They indeed got a warrant. So it's a little mind-bending to me to now find to say there was an exigency when really they had such advance notice and they were able to get a warrant.
Your Honor, the warrants retained by the officer were signed at 10:30. The search was conducted at approximately 10:30 or 11. At the time that the officers conducted the search, smoke was coming out of the shed. I suppose that you could suggest that had the warrant, had the officers known that the warrant was not proper, they could have rushed back to the magistrate and obtained a second warrant. But given the circumstances at the time when smoke was coming out of the shed, they did not have an opportunity to obtain a second warrant. And I think that the more important issue is that this code section does not require the suppression of evidence discovered during a reasonable search. And a reasonable search can occur when exigent circumstances exist.
Well, the Fourth Amendment doctrine also says that the fact that you can get a warrant, and there is time to get a warrant, does not per se mean that the circumstances that you see on the scene are not exigent.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I suggest that a finding that some sort of deficiency in obtaining the warrant then invalidates a valid warrantless search.
If having enough time to get one doesn't eliminate the warrantless search under exigent circumstances, going ahead and using the time and getting one can't either.
That's correct. And these officers should not be punished for attempting to get the warrant properly.
The irony is, if we were to punish them in a case like this, they're not going to go get the warrant.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Or fear that some technical violation they have no control over whatsoever will render not only a warrantless search invalid, but also a statutory warrant search invalid.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
I guess the problem is the legislature has seen fit to impose a penalty for not filing this warrant in court. Given your interpretation, how is that enforced? It's just like, well, if you don't do it, well, it's just you just didn't do it. It has no penalty.
My answer to that is twofold. The legislature only invalidated searches conducted under the warrant. Determining that...
And you just say it's not. Even though you did it pursuant to the warrant, if you've got other reasons, then later you say it wasn't under the search.
That's correct.
It wasn't under the warrant.
That's correct.
And so it makes no difference whether you followed it or not.
Well, it does make a difference if you...
What apparently the General Assembly wanted you to do.
Your Honor, I would suggest it does make a difference in circumstances where there aren't other circumstances that justify the search. So had the law enforcement officers gone to the scene and not seen any of the other...
Justify a warrantless search.
Correct. Had the officers gone to the scene and not seen the smoke, had not been receiving real-time communications, if they had just gone to the scene with the warrant and immediately entered the shed, then perhaps that would be an invalid search. But here, the words under the warrant in Code Section 19.2-54 must mean something. To determine that a failure to comply with this code section renders any search that's justified by exclusions to the exclusionary rule, that such a conclusion would render under the warrant in 19.2-54 meaningless.
So there's a separate independent basis. So there's a search under the warrant, there's a search that's justified by something else. And your point is, if all you have is under the warrant, the legislative determination would have force. But if there's a separate independent basis, then the fruits of the search are okay.
That's
so under that, your good faith argument has to just disappear.
Well, I would suggest that that the good faith argument does not necessarily have to disappear. I think that you can also read 19.2-54 to mean that the General Assembly did not intend that invalidation was the automatic result of a failure to file the affidavit. The General Assembly said that a court shall not invalidate the search when the affidavit is not filed within 30 days. It did not say that a circuit court must invalidate a search. And I think that makes sense in circumstances like this, where when you look at the facts in this case, which was the notice-based purpose of this statute was satisfied, then Code Section 19.2-54's invalidation component does not need to be executed.
The suppression remedy is not even expressed. It's entirely implied.
That is correct. And the Court of Appeals also found that it was an implicit...
It's not stated that if you violate the 30 days, you shall suppress. It doesn't say anything like that. It implies that. But maybe it implies may, maybe it implies good faith, maybe it implies a lot of things. But the thumb against the scale is we don't suppress unless it's clear under state statutory law.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I'd suggest that this Court's holding in Quintana supports a determination that suppression is not necessary. In that case, the court found that as long as the defendant had ample opportunity to challenge the probable cause determination that justified or supported the issuance of the warrant, then the search need not be invalidated. In this case, the defendant had ample opportunity to challenge the probable cause determination. He had a copy of Begley's affidavit. We know that from the testimony at the hearing that Begley said that he testified exactly to those same points when he spoke with the magistrate, and Begley retained a copy of that affidavit. So I'd suggest to this court that given Quintana's holding, this court can find that a search does not necessarily have to be invalidated when the notice-based purpose of the statute is satisfied.
Let me ask you a question, if I might. First of all, let me make an observation. The enforcement of the Fourth Amendment and suppression is not a function of punishing police officers.
If I implied as much, Your Honor, I apologize. I misspoke.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate use of words.
I apologize.
If the officers were, according to this record, about 15 to 20 yards away from the shed, is that right?
Yes,
sir. Right. Assume for a moment that there was no attempt to get a warrant at all. It's a warrantless circumstances. Were they on the defendant's property?
There was no evidence to suggest whose property they were on when they observed.
Assuming that they were, for the sake of this argument, can law enforcement, absent a warrant, trespass and then take advantage of exigencies in order to justify a search?
Your Honor, I think that a recent case from the United States Supreme Court provides guidance. Utah versus Streeth, which came out in 2016, suggests that when police misconduct is not flagrant, that subsequent justification for a search In that case, an officer did not have sufficient reasonable articulable suspicion to stop an individual. But then, once he had stopped the individual, he learned that there was an outstanding warrant for the defendant. After
that doesn't involve trespass. Now, let me ask you in a different sort of way, because obviously I'm trying to understand the connection between no warrant and a defective warrant. If you're out in the countryside, and let's assume the officers drove 2 miles down a driveway and positioned themselves, and that's where the shed was, and then all of a sudden there was smoke coming out, does an officer who is clearly trespassing at that point in time have the benefit of exigent circumstances in order to justify a trespass and a search?
Well, Your Honor, I'd suggest that the connection is too attenuated, and in circumstances where there's smoke coming out, I think that you could also make a community caretaker argument or some sort of argument that they were justified to enter to protect.
Even if to get that position, it was unlawful.
I'd suggest that if they're on the driveway, that's not flagrant misconduct as discussed in Utah versus Streeth, and so they're... You're entitled to be on a driveway and entering someone's property unless there's no trespassing.
No trespassing, right at the outset. No trespassing. This includes you, officers of the law.
Your Honor, my position would be that it's still too attenuating once they...
So they're not trespassing when it says no trespassing?
I would suggest that once they view these exigent circumstances, then yes, they may enter.
Even if they're there unlawfully?
I suppose, Your Honor, that one could find that is a flagrant violation of the defendant's rights, and if that was the case, then yes.
All right, you wanted to save some time. Why don't you do that?
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Robert Goad, and I represent the appellee, James Campbell, in this criminal appeal. The Court of Appeals ruling was correct for two reasons. The first was because Section 19.2-54 supplies a statutory right of suppression. And the second is because exigent circumstances, an exigent circumstances analysis is not applicable when you're reviewing an affidavit and a search warrant under 19.2-54.
Can I direct you to that last question? Suppose it were. Suppose that under the warrant means under this warrant. And if you have a separate ground completely independent of the statute to make the arrest or the search, you can do it. In which exigent circumstances would be available. I'm rereading your brief now. What is your response to the presence or absence of exigent circumstances? Do you contest that they were not in a position to make the observations or any of that?
I would contest that the finding by the trial court that exigent circumstances existed was wrong if we get to that point.
Well, at some point, your 15 minutes get to that point, so I think it's going to be pretty important.
Yes, Your Honor. I can jump right to that. There's a list that the court in Vera's laid out. It's not an exhaustive list. Based on the evidence at trial, at most there were three that I found bases or factors from that list that were present. One was a seriousness of an offense. Certainly manufacturing methamphetamine is serious. I will concede that. There was certainly probable cause given what the officers knew about what was going on.
So we have a meth lab cooking in present tense, smoke's coming out of the stack, there's probable cause. That's not exigent circumstances.
I believe to justify a warrantless search under the exigent circumstances exception to the warrant requirement, you must have probable cause as well as exigent circumstances.
Of course.
And so certainly probable cause is present. Then the only other factors in Vera's that are present are that it's a serious offense and that the defendants or the criminals, would-be criminals, are present on the scene. In this case, these people were there. There was no evidence that there were guns, that they knew the police were about to come in on them.
The cooking itself.
Can we not take judicial notice that meth labs have a bad habit of blowing up?
Certainly they do. I believe the evidence in this case was that this was the most benign type of manufacturer operation. My argument would be
would
that
they have known that you got a meth lab in a mobile home park. Is that correct? I mean, there's like folks are not park, but there's other residents around who are just watching TV and doing things like that. And smoke is coming out, and you're going to go, I think that's a benign meth lab as opposed to a more aggressive meth lab.
I would argue to the court that the circumstances as they appeared to the officers at the time the decision to enter was made, well, first one is when the decision to enter is made should be the controlling time to determine whether they're exigent circumstances.
Agreed. So you don't know if it's benign or not at that moment.
Correct, Your Honor. When they made the decision to enter was when the officer was at the magistrate filling out the affidavit, swearing to it, and obtaining the search warrant. At that point, a cook was planned, but not even yet in progress.
But how can doing more than you absolutely need to do prejudice your ability to do what you can do without it? In other words, if you're a police officer and you've got exigent circumstances, you've got probable cause, we want to encourage them to nonetheless go to a magistrate.
Correct.
But why do that if the magistrate can't run the telefax machine and the whole prosecution is going to be lost over something as silly as that?
Because the implications of this case, not that they do penalize something that happened because of the magistrate, but going forward, if the court were to agree with the Court of Appeals, it would incentivize officers to go get an affidavit and get a warrant.
I don't think so. I think what would happen is, if some suppression remedy drops because the magistrate doesn't know how to use the fax machine, then I'm not going to them unless I have to, because I can't take that risk in a big case.
The important distinction in this case deals with the two different affidavits. There was an affidavit that the magistrate had, that the first page was faxed to the court. The second affidavit that Investigator Begley had was separate had different hand changes on it, and while he testified that they were the same, it is clear in the record that they were not the same, and we have no way of knowing exactly what was written on that second page or what hand changes were made.
But there was no Franks hearing in this case. Was there a Franks hearing?
There was no Franks hearing because the defendant did not have an opportunity to ever see what the second page of the affidavit the magistrate acknowledged, certified, and then filed contained. And that was the real prejudice to the defendant in this case, was that he was never able to actually see the original affidavit that was presented to the magistrate that supported the warrant. Without being able to see that, the defendant, one, has the statutory right of notice, the purpose of 19.254 violated. Two, he also is unable to attack the four instances where an exception to the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule is not applicable. And he's also not able to challenge the officer's veracity when reviewing what he presented to the magistrate. And back to my point about the effect of this case going forward, this is going to ensure that the affidavit that's on file with the court is the one, the original one, which was presented to the magistrate, not some affidavit that has additional hand changes. And it really forces forces the magistrates and the officers to not be going behind after it's typed up to save time and scribble a hand change, make edits to warrants that may not be in one warrant but are in another. It would create a regime where you must have a single warrant that is the correct original warrant that's filed and then achieves the notice purposes of 19.2-54. And that's really our argument.
That original warrant, we just don't know what happened to it?
It was never produced. It was never admitted into evidence. And I never received a copy of the second page that was certified to the magistrate. I did receive the copy that Investigator Begley had, but I never received a complete copy that matched. There were hand changes, and so you could tell that they were two different affidavits.
Mr. Grove, let me ask you this. I asked a lot of questions of Ms. Adelfio because sometimes hypotheticals are used to test the limits of the legal principle. But this record doesn't show that the police officers trespassed. It's completely silent on it. So assuming that there wasn't anything of that nature in this case, if exigent circumstances existed, it would certainly support the search where there is no warrant. Now, if that's the case, why would exigent circumstances not justify a search when the warrant is defective?
My argument, and there, I don't want to misclassify my research, but it was there didn't seem to be a very clear case precedent on this issue. There were some cases dealing with where exigent circumstances existed before a warrant was obtained, but when exigent circumstances is a way to justify a warrantless search in violation of the Fourth Amendment. It should not be a way to justify a case where the circumstances are initially not exigent and then entry is made, because at every point in an arrest and evidence collection proceeding, exigency
arises. Well, how much time elapses? I mean, I get the timeline of this case is not such that it gave them a whole lot of time. And everybody's talking about how meth labs blow up, and that certainly is the destruction of evidence, if not destruction of people. I mean, if you create the exigency, I agree, the case law is clear. But I don't see anything in this record that shows that the officers created an exigency. And if they could do this without a warrant, why does a defective warrant in a timeline that makes it absolutely clear that the officers didn't create the exigency, why isn't it treated the same?
My first argument, and I understand that we are assuming in this hypothetical that exigencies exist, but my first argument would be to go back and say that exigencies did not exist at the time the decision to enter was made when they assembled everyone to go in.
Right. You know, for whatever it's worth, I think you ought to move off of that one, because the question is, assume it does.
Then, in that case, it is a difficult point, Your Honor. I will concede that. But my argument would be that the exigencies, the officer's decision to enter, it is a difficult one, Your Honor. I may not have a good answer for it.
Can I make it a little harder for you? Isn't that difficulty all the more exacerbated when we have a statute that literally does not include a suppression remedy? It has to be implied from the language. It's not express.
I would argue that we have to give meaning to every word in the statute.
I'm not denying there's a reasonable implication. The question is, what do you do with it, and what's the scope of it, and what the exceptions are to an implied suppression as opposed to an express suppression?
Well, there is no express suppression in this, but to not read it to mean that it must be suppressed would not give meaning to the word unless. And the real point is that we should differentiate the right the legislature gave defendants in this statute from a situation where the analysis is under the Fourth Amendment. The legislature created this right where, when a search is made under the warrant, and it's important to note in this case that, in fact, the search was made under the warrant. The warrant was executed in an inventory return. It was only later at trial when the exigent circumstances argument popped up. So when you have a search under a warrant, that would trigger the 19.2-54 statute and the statutory suppression right at that point. And so we would never get to exigent circumstances when a warrant is obtained in that fact pattern. I hope that answered your question. I'm not sure where I am in my outline. I'm happy to answer any questions the court has. If the court has any more for me, otherwise I'll step down.
All right, rebuttal.
Your Honor, I just wanted to revisit my previous in speaking. The purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct. In this case, there was no police misconduct. Here, the officers did everything right. They attempted to get a warrant. Investigator Begley provided the affidavit in triplicate to the magistrate. He retained two copies of that affidavit. He had no reason to believe that the magistrate would be unable to operate the fax machine, that there'd be some sort of technical issue. And Code Section 19.2-54 does not require the suppression of evidence that is recovered as a result of a search that's justified by independent factors.
19.254 permits suppression.
It permits.
You acknowledge that? Here's the challenge. Your argument really can be boiled down to this, that if you didn't need a warrant in the first place, we're not going to look to the sanctions of 19.254.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The problem is that actually is adding words to 19.254 because it doesn't say that this applies only if you have to have a search warrant. It seems to apply every time that a search warrant is applied for.
I would disagree, Your Honor. I would just suggest that it provides...
Point to something in the statute that says this only applies... That this doesn't apply if you didn't need a warrant in the first place.
I think that the language under the warrant limits the application of suppression to only searches conducted under a warrant. In the last paragraph?
Yeah. But
so I would suggest that...
Your argument is we don't have to look at the last paragraph. That was the predicate for the question. We don't have to look to the last paragraph if a warrant wasn't required in the first place. That's the nub of your argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Puzzle with that.
Call the next case.